Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. We have a very exciting episode for you today. A huge interview. Perhaps the biggest guest I have ever had on Wrestling Nostalgia. Possibly one of the most known names I've ever had here on Wrestling Nostalgia. My guest on this episode is a former WWE champion, a former TNA champion, a former ECW champion. He is the whole effing show. He is Rob Van Dam. This is a great conversation. We talk about all kinds of cool stuff. The Sheik, ECW, CBD, lots of other things. I cannot wait for you to hear this. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have my interview with Rob Van Dam.
Phil Center Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilSingerGames.com to order now.
If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams.
All right, and welcome back at this time. I'm being joined by a former WWE, TNA, and ECW champion, and a WWE Hall of Famer. He is the whole effing show. He is one of a kind. He is Rob Van Dam. Sir, how are you?
I am fantastic. I appreciate you asking, Dave.
Yeah, of course. So we got some exciting stuff to talk about later, but let's talk a little about your career before we get to that. And I'm not going to ask you the same rudimentary questions everybody asks about, what happened this date and that date and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
I'm not interested in that kind of stuff so much. I mean, you grew up in Michigan, right? And everybody's heard the stories, right? You on the Ted DiBiase skit, you at WrestleMania 3. So I guess it's safe to say that you grew up a wrestling fan, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I was a little late in the game, but it was somewhere around WrestleMania. It must have been the first WrestleMania that crossed over into my world. Like all my friends liked it before I did. And I just listened to the parents that didn't like it. You know, I remember specifically the other kids talking about wrestling and me just, just because when you're a kid, you kind of just adopt the feelings of adults. You don't really know what you're, and you repeat everything you heard because you're still developing, right? I just remember, those names are stupid. Brutus Beefcake. That sounds so ridiculous. What was the other one? It was Brutus Beefcake, and I can't remember what the other one was. And I just thought the names like sounded funny to me. And I remember f feeling high and mighty one time, in a conversation. But then I went and watched it with them and fell in love with it. Couldn't wait to
Well,
watch it the following week.
you're not too far off on the beefcake name. No offense to Brutus, but
No,
did you ever cross paths with Brutus and tell him that story?
I never told him that. And usually, I remember when I started at the beginning of that sentence there, I knew the second one was too. But right now,
That's all right.
I can't remember who the name was that I was laughing at along with him before I'd ever seen them. But I do remember at that time who was there. Like when I first started watching it was the Iron Sheik and. The Corporal Kirshner army dude.
Yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that.
Well, and I grew up in Indiana. So I grew up in Dick the Bruiser country.
Okay.
But us in Indiana knew of, right, the name in Michigan, the Sheik, right? And when you decided to enter wrestling, that's who you went to. That's who you worked with. That's who you trained. But how does that happen? Because the Sheik has always been known as super protective, right?
Yeah.
Super careful with his gimmicks. So how do you get into the Sheik's world?
Yeah, well, he sure was super protective the whole time that he trained me. I got brought in by a friend, and I had been doing my homework, writing and calling wrestling schools all over the country. There was a list in a wrestling magazine. Well, there was an ad. It said, send $5, we'll send you a list of all the wrestling schools. So I did. And I was actually like, I talked to Killer Kowalski, and I thought that I was going to go to Boston and go to his school. And I went and visited it. And I was like, man, this is everything that I want. I mean, the name, the credibility, the longevity, the people he's trained, his respectability in the business, like everything. 'Cause I saw some that were open and closed down overnight, some schools. And unfortunately, I went to one in Indiana in Fort Wayne. It was closed before we got there, me and my buddies, but they had the logo spray painted on the wall. So we were cool with taking pictures next to the logo for the 4 hour drive. But anyway, yeah, I was bagging groceries, saving money up, and this big 320-pound power lifter came through, and I struck up a conversation with him. Turns out he's a wrestler, and he ended up bringing me, introducing me to the Sheik, and then I had a tryout, and then the Sheik took me on. And later on, I got my best friend. There too, about 6 months later. And it was a real small little private kind of training. It wasn't, couldn't really call it a school. There was usually two to three of us there. And if everyone showed up all at the same time, it would still only be like maybe five people.
Well, I mean, it's weird to imagine what it would have been like. Say if you'd went to Kowalski, because training with the Sheik, being there in Michigan, that's where you met Sabu.
Yes.
And which obviously, it's hard not to think when you think Rob Van Dam, it's hard not to think of Sabu, whether it be tag partners, whether it be opponents, or just the fact of how close your friendship was. It's peculiar to think, right? The whole different path it would have been.
It is when I think about the actual wrestling that I would have learned, it might not have been as different as you think because the Sheik and Killer Kowalski were both trained by the same guy, a guy named Bert Ruby. Oh, you knew that. Okay. So, but anyway, that's very true. I met Sabu the same time that I met the Sheik. And he's been my brother since I was 18 years old. So very influential on me developing into the person that I became, and watching him, not just in the ring, but also seeing how he treats people, you know, for better or worse. You know, sometimes I'd watch him and I'd say, man, I don't want to be like that. You know what I mean? And those would be cases like he was like way too generous.
Yeah.
You'll hear anybody that knew Sabu tell you the same thing. He was always like that since day one. If he just had enough money to take care of the whole table, then that's where his check would go. And he'd want to buy for everybody. And he gives to everybody on the street as if they're family. And it's something that I couldn't stop him doing that for his own benefit. You know, I'd be like, bro, you just said you only got $20. Why'd you just give that guy $10? He'd say, well, because he has nothing.
Yeah.
But you don't know. Why do you, you don't owe that guy? And he's like, well, hopefully the universe will bring it back. And, you know, so anyway, I just mean, you know, like there was a lot of things that I would pattern myself after, and then other things that would strengthen my own values and morals. But definitely Sabu is my brother. I can't imagine how different I would have been as a person and as a wrestler if Sabu wasn't part of my path.
Yeah. And you mentioned the styles, because I've always been curious. How did you, because you and Sabu, right, have always been known as these super innovative guys, right? And you really... You moved the bar of professional wrestling, right? You changed the direction. And that's not the Sheik style, right? What you and Sabu wrestled is, I mean, not what the Sheik was known for.
Right.
Was the Sheik aware of the kind of stuff you guys were trying? Or was that the Sheik's away, we got a little time in the ring, let's do our thing?
It was very much more the later.
Okay.
Anytime Sheik was in the ring or sitting in a chair beside the ring watching, it was always about the basics, the fundamentals. It was always about, you know, just locking up and headlocking and arm bars and reversals and trying to win, trying to pin your opponent, you know, and dive on him. He's down on the mat. You know, what are you doing? You weren't allowed to look around at the crowd. You know, he's right there. What are you doing? And he never taught us how to like land the right way or how to take care of ourselves or our opponents. This is how to, you know, do something without injuring the guy. That was not part of our training at all. Yeah. We had a certain sense of reasonableness because we were fans and we felt like we kind of had an idea how it worked somewhat. And so that got us enough, you know, to get by and be able to work with each other as much as we had to while the Sheik was there having us really work against each other. And we couldn't be rough enough. You know, we couldn't look rough enough. Our bodies couldn't be close enough together. He always wanted us to squeeze harder and growl and flex. And every once in a while, he would have to get up there and show us. And then that was something we didn't really want because, you know, what do? You know, except for sell it. We're not going to fight back at him or anything. And he would bite us and choke us and get all fired up. And it was like, he never broke what we would call kayfabe. It wasn't part of our training.
Yeah. So again, like we talked, right? The Sheik never, he protected, right? He protected the business. He protected his gimmick, his image. But what was it like for you guys that got to kind of know the Ed Farhat, the guy behind it a little bit? Did he let that guard down? What was he like away from the gimmick?
He didn't let the guard down a whole lot. And when he did, you know, he would like look at me and say, "Don't you tell anybody," or something like that. You know, really, the only time that I would see him act different would be around his. I guess it was I forget if it was his niece or granddaughter, but there was this little girl that would come around. I figured out who she was from reading the book on him, but I can't remember the name right now. But this little must have been 3 or 4, and he would just melt and be so soft when she was around. And it was like, it was so funny that sometimes we'd laugh, and he didn't like that. You know, what are you laughing at?
Yeah, did it blow your mind? I mean, like the first time you heard the Sheik talk, did that blow your mind? I mean, it's.
Yeah, because I mean, he would be, what was her name? He would be like, how's my sweet little baby doing? How you? He'd be this, you know, complete opposite.
Oh man, he didn't pull out the pencil on her. Huh? He didn't.
No,
which you're obviously you're referring to the Brian Solomon book, right? Which I think didn't.
Yeah,
you wrote the foreword to. Is that correct?
I did.
Great book. Yeah. Absolutely wonderful book.
Yeah, and, I would like to have a conversation with her sometime and tell her how I remember those times when we would come into the house. And it was a very family like situation. You know, it was we would train the, you know, three of us or so usually, then swim in his pool. And then Joyce, Sheik's wife, would make food. We'd sit at the table and eat in his kitchen while Sheik's telling us stories and stuff. So it was a very personal and family and intimate experience. Unlike, you know, one of the machines where you're just in line waiting to take the next bump and they just like, run you through the course. It wasn't like that at all.
No. Yeah, well, I mean, it was a family business, right? I mean, big time wrestling, that was...
Yeah.
You know,
but to what you said, though, you know, I was already a martial artist and I was already acrobatic. So I told Sheik that's what I had. So my tryout was basically, he put me in the ring and said, all right, show me what you got by myself. So I'm doing, you know, kicks, flips. And he's like, what else? So I nip up, you know, split. What else? Backflip off the top rope. What else you got? And I was like, damn, I guess that's about it. And then he put Sabu in the ring with me. And Sabu just grabbed me and, you know, pulled me and jerked me and pushed me. And we were doing that all the way around the ring, back and forth. And I didn't know, am I supposed to fight this? Am I supposed to go with it? Am I supposed to show him that I can counter, that I have balance? I have no idea. And I was just really kind of like, my mind was blown that this was even happening. And then a few minutes of that, and then the Sheik, and then Sabu told me, he let me on a little insight. He said under his breath so she couldn't hear, you did good today. Because I really didn't know. And I was like, okay, that felt good to hear.
Yeah.
And then Sheik was like, come back next week and bring me some money. But I had the flips and the kicks, and I taught Sabu some acrobatics and stuff, backflips and stuff. And he taught me, of course, how to wrestle, but that was stuff we only got in when Sheik wasn't around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and like I said, I don't want to go through everything, right? But in those early days, right, you worked some USWA. It's weird to think about some of this, right? You worked the USWA. You had an early run in WCW as Robbie V. You know, you worked some in All Japan. But eventually you landed in ECW in 96. And that's probably at least one of the two places you're most known for, obviously. Most tied to.
For sure.
So when you connected with ECW Paul Heyman, was that through Sabu, who was already there?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sabu put in the word, right? And Heyman brought you in. Did you, again, a lot of what you're talking about with the Sheik, right, and your training, the things, the stuff that you wanted to do, and that, but that connection of what you wanted to do, and plus what the fundamentals of the Sheik was teaching you, when you mold all that together, that's kind of ECW in a nutshell, right? I mean, it's taking this foundation, pushing it forward, doing some things. Because I always hate that preconceived notion everybody has of ECW, of it's blood and guts, and it's just all barbed wire and hard. Because that's not all of it, right? ECW, the work rate was unreal, and because of guys like you and Sabu and stuff, when you hit ECW and you started working there, did it feel right for you and what you wanted to do with your career?
Really, it really did. It really did. And the longer I was there, the better it felt, you know. And it just felt like I mastered that crowd, that connection, that style. I felt like my efforts were helping build like the whole company, which was a great feeling to be part of that. And we were part of a movement, you know, so it was really exciting. And you could say that perspectively, that they, you know, it was about taking taking the norm and then adding an extreme level to it.
Yeah.
But we all did our own thing. That's where people get confused, because like I'm not a big fan of garbage matches, and some of the internet wrestling community basic thinkers were saying that's hypocritical because I was on ECW. I didn't do light bulbs, and I didn't even do barbed wire. And my thing with the garbage matches is when you don't even have to know how to wrestle to have those matches, that's where I draw the line and say, you know, that's garbage wrestling, the death matches. But, but you know, it has its following and whatever, but we had like, I really didn't know if the gangsters, if they knew how to wrestle or not, because that wasn't part of their shtick. They didn't do any wrestling. Then there's other guys like Lance Storm or Jerry Lynn, and all they did was like clean cut wrestling. And then there was everything in between, you know, guys that just didn't mind breaking the rules, or guys like me and Sabu that liked going to the extreme for the moves. And so, yeah, it was a great fit. And I didn't know that going in. Matter of fact, sure. First time Paul talked to me about coming in, it didn't work out. And then Sabu made him call me back again and sweeten the offer. And then I ended up coming in. And then Sabu had to tell me how great our match was, he and I, that we had. Maybe it was Hostile City Showdown. We had a match there at the arena, and all the fans, or the boys, were clapping in the back when I walked through. And it was weird because I'd never seen that. And I really honestly didn't know it was for me and Sabu. I didn't know if something just happened when I was walking back towards the dressing room. I didn't know. And I asked Sabu, I said, "This just happened. You know, what's up with that?" And he said, "Oh," he said, that was for us because they loved our match. He said, "Me and you, we wrestle each other all the time, and our matches are always good, but they never see anything like that. So it's like on another level here." And I was like, "Really? Like, okay." I had to be told that and then understand it. And then it became natural.
Yeah. And since the years since ECW, right? And as fans got to know you a little more, right? Between your podcast and things like that, we can see that, like, the Rob Van Dam I'm talking to right now is not. It's maybe just a little bit calmer version of the Rob Van Dam we saw on ECW TV, right? That was you. It wasn't a character, right? It was maybe just you amping it up a little bit.
Right. You know.
Did Heyman support that? Is that what he wanted? I mean, did he look at you and say, "Man, you've got enough charisma, enough character, just do your thing"?
Yeah, I think we just, you know, tapped into what worked organically. And at first, like, I didn't want to go anywhere near the mic, the promo room, and do in the cameras. And I was scared to death of that. You know, of trying to convince somebody that they should buy a ticket to come out and see me. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, you know what? I'm going to the hotel room. And then eventually, you know, Paul gave me Fonzie, and I think that was probably to help, you know, put a crutch on that weakness, probably, because that really brought a lot out of me, because I was so opposite Fonzie, and then Fonzie would be so amped up and you know, be like, "Tampa, Florida, when we come down there," and he would be like screaming, and I would just be myself, and I would, just like I would if we were in a hotel room, I'd be like, "Brother, whoa, calm down. You gotta scream and spit all over everybody. I'm right here. We hear you. We know RVD's coming. They're already in line to buy their ticket, brother." You know.
Yeah.
It was just kind of organic and natural. It wasn't like a conversation where we said, "Let's avoid a character." I was just never drawn to or you know, got off on, really. Even with acting, like, it took a while, because my first year's worth of movie parts and TV parts, I would just try. It would be just like RVD saying the line, you know. And I'm dry and come across, you know, not very dramatic in my own opinion. And then it took a long time till I could like commit to the part and step out of being RVD just because I just figured that was where the money was, you know.
Do you enjoy pushing your boundaries like that and exploring something that maybe you're not super comfortable with and trying to improve that?
Sometimes, but I'm more comfortable in my own zone and what I would say is my realm, you know. So I'm not, you know, I do acting, and I'm an opportunist when parts come out that I feel like are suitable for me. However, I don't want to challenge myself and do a singing, dancing part. You know, mute where I'm a music in a musical on stage. Like that's just so not me and not something that I would enjoy doing.
Yeah. Oh, and so you know your strengths, right? And you.
Yeah, that's a good part of knowing your strengths is knowing your weaknesses.
Yeah. Well, and everybody knows, right? Talks about ECW, knows about the shortcomings, right? The issues with pay, the different things, all those struggles. That's all been documented out there so many times. I'm always curious about the ECW, the TNN deal, right? Because I was a fan at the time, and it felt I was happy, right? Don't get me wrong, I was glad to see more ECW on TV, but it felt odd, right? ECW on what was always the Nashville network, it just felt peculiar. But I know for you guys in the locker room, maybe you in particular, did it feel hopeful for you? Did you hope that it would fix some of the issues, or were you guys kind of shaking your head like, oh, this is just what is this?
I thought, okay, here's a channel that everybody gets on their TV, but it's not really showing anything except for fishing and Dukes of Hazzard reruns. So I thought, okay, this is going to be our channel. Like, we're going to be able to take it over. We're going to be like the highest rated show by far. And then they're going to want to get behind us and push us. We're going to see ECW on the city buses on the side of them and on billboards, and they'll start pushing us, and then we'll get a fair chance at being competitive because a fair share of the market's going to be exposed to our product. And I always felt like, man, if enough people saw us, enough people would stick to us, but, you know, because we got that car crash appeal. The first time I watched ECW, when Sabu was talking about me coming up, I was living in Florida, and I remember turning it on, and I was just like, holy shit, you know, these guys are crazy. Like everything from, you know, diving into the crowd, fire, setting the crowd on fire, you know, and all the chairs, and the fans' participation. Like it was something that was way different, and it was cool. Subjectively, in an area where, you know, wrestling wasn't necessarily cool at the time. And so, yeah, I had a lot of hope. I thought this is best case scenario because maybe if we get on a really big popular channel, maybe we'll get buried. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And it didn't, but it didn't work out that way, right? I mean, you guys were, I do believe, right? You had the numbers. You were getting the viewers. They just weren't getting behind you. They weren't giving
Yeah,
you
you
the
know,
hype or the lead-ins or anything.
I'll never know like how much of the actual truth I was told because there
Sure.
was a lot of things were said during that time that weren't true, and there was a lot of things going on behind the scenes that I was unaware of. But from what I understand, we were their highest rated show, and Paul told us that the reason that it went, and then it went from the Nashville Network to it was well TNN.
Yeah, they tried to get away from the Nashville part of it a little bit, right? They
Yeah,
just,
there was something between there and Spike. There was something else they used TNN for, but anyway, anyway, I was told, as were all of us guys, ECW boys, by Paul, that the reason that the channel wasn't getting behind us was because they were going to have WWE on instead of us, and they were just using us for a test pattern, and so didn't want to put anything into us, and were secretly behind the scenes already strengthening and working out all the details of their deal with WWE as soon as our minimal contract was up or they got rid of us.
Yeah. And, well, again, there's kernels. It's like pro wrestling. Right? There's kernels of truth in there probably, but yeah. Who knows? How much is it being,
right.
But in this time period or in 2000, right, you broke your ankle and it brought to an end that legendary TV title reign, right? That TV title was RVD's title, right? It was just part of the look, part of the gimmick, right? It was like it was made for you.
It's sitting right over
yeah. Here. And yeah. And the thing is, and I know, right. I mean, as a fan, maybe it's selfish, but the thing that sucked most with you breaking your ankles, it was building towards the RVD versus Mike Awesome. We felt that title versus title, which would have been fucking amazing. Right. It would have been so unreal to see. I mean, it had to be disappointing for you on multiple levels, right?
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. For a lot of reasons, like you said, multiple levels. One of them was that I thought I was Superman and thought I was indestructible. That really, to have that taken away from you when you're at that status and competitive, that really sucks, because people looking at you like, damn, man, you must be made of rubber. You see these bumps every he takes, he never gets hurt. All of a sudden, boom, I can't work because I'm injured. And that's, I don't like that story, whatever it is. And so that sucked. And then having to give over the TV championship sucked. That's my favorite championship reign of my career. I was making the TV championship mean the most out of the whole card. I wanted to go heavyweight champion Mike Awesome against TV champion RVD. And I really respected the hell out of Mike Awesome as an ECW heavyweight champion. I thought he was great. And a great example of being a champion in ECW, because he didn't have to take the chances that he took.
Yeah.
He was out there working that savage crowd the way a champion should, and that would involve sometimes climbing up the turnbuckle with his back to it to step up on that top rope to do a power bomb, and like, man, you slip on that, you're done. Those are the kind of moves you wipe out once you start getting on TV a lot and let the young guys, fuck it up. But Mike did those and his dives, and he looked so good and so big.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt like I was at, I felt like I was at the prime of my game too. I was fighting for something I really believed in for real,
Two guys who neither one could get beat, right? Both seem unbeatable. And what happens when the two unbeatable meet?
There's been so many times throughout my career where they try to fabricate that, this Intercontinental title means everything to me. This is what I feed my family with. And you're gonna take it from me? Fuck no, you're not. But in reality, it's like you're trying to do a passable promo. But that really fucking meant everything to me, that TV title. So fuck yeah, I had to give that up.
Yep.
To Rhino when I broke my ankle on a simple baseball slide, and that hurt. It was definitely not one of my happiest moments in my career. There's been a few like that, where I was just like, disgusted with the moment, disgusted with myself, and just, feeling like I was at a low point. Not to fast forward, but same when I dropped the WWE and ECW championship. The WWE championship in Philly, and I was going back there to say, we did it, and instead, Fuck, man. They buried us, mostly Big Show and Paul, but I was getting pelted with the litter, and I remember rolling under the ring, and I felt like one of the lowest parts of my career, like my just like so down, like, dude, where's the gutter? Leave me down here. I belong here.
Yeah. So when you broke your ankle, did you feel like you were letting the company down some too? Because
Totally,
you
totally.
had the family, right? And RVD, you were shouldering a lot of that at that time. And I mean, it's affecting a lot of guys, a lot of your friends. And did that weigh on you a little?
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I got one surgery in my whole career, my whole life, and that was knee surgery in 2005. And even then, I felt like that. I remember I was sobbing when Vince, when I was talking to Vince about what the doctor said about I need, at least 5 or 6 months off. And I was just like, I felt like damn, man, like I, 'cause I don't know, like yeah, it's a feeling of disappointing everyone else, and they understand, and you'll be back in a few months. But if that when you're wrapped in that moment. Like I said, it takes away from me being able to lie to myself and claim I'm invulnerable, and then it's almost like vindicating the haters, that are like, you're gonna get hurt sometime doing all that crazy shit you do, even though it's something simple, like a baseball slide, it's always something simple.
And you worked right up with ECW up to the last pay-per-view. What kept you loyal through all the uneasiness, right? I mean, and all the not knowing where the pay was coming next. And this, I mean, what kept you loyal to Heyman and ECW?
There was a lot. One, it was my favorite place to work. Two, I really wanted to see it work out. I didn't want to have to go anywhere. I thought if we got a fair shake at everybody just being exposed to us, getting to see us one time, boom, those buses and billboards, like I said, we're going to be able to make a living here doing it our way and not have to go anywhere. That's what I hoped for. And the fact that, some checks were bouncing or whatever, that wasn't as big of a deal as it would be if you were at a job you didn't care about. You know what I
Sure.
mean? I mean, like, bad business, Bobby Fulton. Not paying when I've done a couple signings for him, and then he tells me, "I don't have the money. I'm finished. I'm done." And then he ends up just continuing to run and rip people off. That's like a whole different story. This it was Paul. I believed that he was doing the best he could. I was getting paid a salary. And I was also not getting paid an amount of royalties. So I did have a hole that was getting bigger and bigger the longer I stayed. But at the same time, I was also being taken care of. So it was like a balancing thing for a while. And then, and I think I only had, like, if I remember right, I think I had one check bounce maybe. And then he made it right. I know that I wasn't getting hit as hard as some of the under talent.
Yeah, but it was clear, right? Paul wasn't pocketing, right? He wasn't like he was taking the money. He was just robbing Peter to keep the company going, right? I mean, he was just trying to stay one step ahead of this chaos.
It
And
appears to be, yeah, but
I mean,
I
no one
can't say for
knows.
sure. Who knows? Like, because if he had himself on his own salary for his own time. You could justify that, but then what? But then what's then what would be the amount that people would think was fair? So who knows? But yeah, you know what? I learned a lot from reading Todd Gordon's book on this. Did you read that,
Yeah,
Todd?
I did. Yeah, and
Yeah.
I've talked to Todd. Yeah, and yeah,
I
there's a
learned
lot.
there was a lot of stuff going on that I didn't know about. And a lot of it I suspected, and some of it I did know, but also stuff I didn't know during that whole time about Paul was floating that, yeah.
Well, and obviously, then you went on to WWE. When you're going in there, right? I mean, obviously, WWE is the pinnacle, right? It's the most widely known wrestling promotion. But you were coming from a promotion that you could do your thing. You could showcase yourself. You could have some input. Did you have trepidation going into this machine, this corporation, on when I get there, will they give me the chance to shine?
Yes, I actually absolutely did. In fact, I waited a reasonable amount of time until that was the only option left in 2001 if I wanted to continue being a TV wrestler in the United States. It was WWE. And Paul was already there, and I knew there was a job waiting for me already. And I was afraid they would change my character, wipe out my past, and then I would be selling out. It was never my favorite style because I was so defensive about the hardcore style and about the realism of our actions compared to, you know, toy weapons hitting each other with rubber sledgehammers or whatever. You know, and so for me, I really felt like I was selling out, but like I said, it was the only option. So I went during this time off in 2001, I went to Thailand and did a movie, Black Mask 2. Mm. Had a lot of fun with that. Thought like that'd be cool to do like B action movies for a while, you know, or something like that. But in the meantime, I ended up calling Paul and saying, I'm ready to talk about coming in. And he was just ready for it. He said, okay, great. I need to call Jim Ross and tell him, let me call you back after I talked in.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I mean, you didn't get a lot of the stink on you there, right? I mean, you had a great run, right? I mean, you held pretty much every title, right? You got to stay pretty true to who you are for the most part, right? And but I'm curious, right, when they revive ECW and they make you that first revived ECW champion, is it bittersweet for you in a way? Because it's like, it's not your ECW, right? It's not that ECW. Was it odd? Did it feel weird to you?
Nah, not really at all, dude. It was, you know, you make the most with what you have. You go from today, not yesterday. And I was stoked to be bringing ECW back in a bigger way than it's ever been before. You know, it was my idea. I went to Vince and I said, why don't we do a pay-per-view? I said, why don't you do a pay-per-view? Just, you know, reunion from all the ECW guys. Just call it, you know, just give us one night only. That's what I called it.
Yeah.
And I said, let us just be ourselves. And it would be so fun and the fans would love it. And he goes, well, Rob, I think I could make a lot of money with that. And I was like, whoa, like, I can't believe that he's buying this. I thought he was going to say, well, Rob, you know, the fans need to learn to move on and forget about something.
Yeah.
I didn't expect him to say that was a good idea. So I started feeding him ideas. Bro, you know how many wrestlers you have here working for you that are former ECW? Like, you don't even need to bring anybody in. You know, you got Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit and I went on and on and on. Chris Jericho, the Dudleys, and this guy, that guy. And he was like, wow, Rob, I didn't realize that. So then I went to Paul and to Tommy. I went to all the boys and telling them that I'm doing this. You know, a lot of them didn't believe it was going to happen. I said, Spike, if I got Vince to do an ECW pay-per-view, you'd want to be on it, right? And he's like, it's not going to happen. I was like, no, I'm telling you, like, I think he's going to bite on this. He's like, never. And I was like, all right, you know, fuck you, Spike. but anyway, to bring it back as a third brand, you know, that in that launching from just that idea and how successful the pay-per-views were, like, that felt like I made something happen. Like you talked about changing the business. I mean, that's doing something significant in the business, causing an actual third brand, and that was the right foot to put forward. So that I was so excited, and no, I didn't feel bittersweet. I felt like we're going to be on their stage. So, if 5 million people saw us before, now it's going to be 500 million people seeing us this time, and there's going to be enough people that love it. That's gonna be drawn towards it. I can be myself again. I felt like Superman. All of a sudden, I felt like, I don't know why, but I felt like I couldn't be as much the ECW RVD when I'm in WWE. It just, if I could have been comfortable with that, it would have been, a different kind of career. Not that it wasn't great, but it was never like that. It always felt like other people were trying to put their two cents in, trying to help me with promos, or trying to tell me, do more of this or do less of that or whatever. And when it came to, okay, we're bringing ECW back. Boom, Rob, more than anybody else. Let us know what needs to be done. That was the difference, And for me, I just felt like Superman. I couldn't wait to wrestle Bob Holly because he was so stiff, and I knew we were going to beat the shit out of each other. And I was just like so ready for that after doing the WWE for the last 5 years, and I was so excited. It was a little different. But it didn't feel that different at first. It meant ECW means anything goes. What was different was there was some wrestlers there that weren't ECW, and not only wrestlers that became ECW, but for some reason there was non-ECW wrestlers that were on the card wrestling each other, and I didn't get that at all. It wasn't like they were using the ECW as a grounds for for solving problems, which would have been cool. You know what I mean? Oh yeah, I'll see you Sunday at ECW, and then anything goes, you can fight with weapons. That would have been really cool. But instead, just for no random reason, you could see like Matt Hardy versus Kane on an ECW show, and then after I left, they got rid of the ECW means anything goes, made it one Extreme Rules match per night, and then there goes your whole product.
Well, and that ECW, that extreme thing, right? It kind of went with you a little bit when you went to TNA as well, right? Because TNA did some of that, and they did some pay-per-views that were, hardcore, that were ECW tribute type, shows. So was that you pitching that idea when you got to TNA as well of?
It wasn't my idea. I was really happy that we were doing it because, I mean, let's face it, we were all at our happiest prospectively. Even if we weren't making the most money, we all had the most fun when we were in ECW, and that's the wrestlers and the fans, and it was a really special moment. And so, it was really cool to be able to. I think it might have been Dreamer's idea. They were saying that they didn't think that the WWE tribute was a very good final goodbye for it. I thought it was fine, like both of the pay-per-views, even though we did the brand afterwards, you know what I mean? So not really in chronological order was it the right thing, but I thought super cool. I guess we did it a couple times because I wrestled Sabu one time when he was bald, and then I also wrestled Jerry Lynn in some Metal Mayhem match or whatever, and it was like, boom, yeah, just like being ECW again. I feel like nobody can tell me shit. I know what's best, and I love having that freedom. And I can't feel that when you tie my hands behind my back.
What is it about ECW that just it won't go away, right? I mean, to this day, you hear the ECW chants, and it's still you don't. I mean, again, no disrespect, but you don't hear guys a crowd breaking into an AWA chant or anything like that, right? It's what is it about that spirit of ECW, do you think, that that makes it still so persistent.
I
And
think it
it.
was just so cool and so different at the time that people will always pay homage to it, even just for it being in that time period. You know, like the parents that watched ECW are showing their kids that are wrestling fans what they missed out on. And so, you know, it's not just chanting for the ECW spirit that's still out there with wrestlers like me and Tommy and Sandman still working. It's also a franchise. It's also paying tribute to that part of their lives, whether they were kids that tell me they snuck out of bed and stayed up till 3 in the morning to watch us on TV, or whether, you know, they were already young adults and choosing that over the WCW or WWF at the time. Either way, I feel now that it's pointing towards a real special moment in time that we're all very proud of being part of.
I
Living
always
that
thought,
together. We
well,
all
I always
live
thought,
that together, you know, the wrestlers, the fans, everybody, and it's something that's really cool to celebrate by chanting ECW.
Yeah, I always thought ECW was so punk rock, right? It's a group of guys that, right, weren't, they didn't quite make it somewhere else, so they're like, screw it, we'll make our own path, we'll do this ourselves, we'll show you, right, that we can do this. And it was so representative, right, from the music, the perception, the style. And I just don't think it could have happened any other time than, right, the 90s, based in Philly. It just,
Right.
everything was perfect.
Yeah. I'd never heard grunge music until I went there. I didn't know what it was. I remember I didn't really get Raven's gimmick, but I knew that the crowd felt so connected to him and they loved him. And I was watching him and trying to figure out, you know, like why and like what is he? And I just remember seeing in Philly, like I went to a nightclub with the Pitbulls one time and it was that grunge music. And it was, and I felt like that's like so different than being in Deep South Georgia where I came from. Such a total different vibe.
What kind of music's RVD listen to? What are
I'm
you?
really probably the least musical
Oh,
person
okay. All right.
that you'll ever meet. I tend to not like music to rob my subconscious.
But again, the music, right? Walk. Perfect for
I
RVD.
picked it because I felt like it felt like that. I feel energy even if I don't know anything about music.
Everybody's song was perfect.
I was there already for a while and I was using this music that they gave me at IWF at Universal Studios, and it was Joe Satriani, Cloud Surfer, and it was so not ECW, but I used that for like my first few weeks, and then I was living in Savannah, and there was a commercial on the radio. Pantera was coming, and they were on tour with White Zombie, and I heard that song, and Sabu and I, of course, were in the middle of this respect angle where we had a match, and I didn't shake his hand afterwards. And then the next pay-per-view was called Matter of Respect. And whoever wins, the loser has to shake his hand. And it became like this big thing. And the timing was just perfect. And I heard that. I heard them singing, you know, respect. And it was that vibe because Paul used a lot of White Zombie on the promo and stuff. And I went to Paul and I was like, dude, can I change my music? And he didn't, I'm surprised he didn't like really, really get it. He was just like, as long as you're not gonna keep asking me to change it. Like you can change it once, but you know, if you really, really want to, but I don't want you to, you know, afterwards you can't keep changing. I was like, no, dude, this is perfect. I've never really heard his take on it or what he felt about it, but I you know. The fans still love to hear that song.
Oh, it's perfect. And right, and you've been active in other areas, right? You did some acting. You mentioned that. And everything else, but let's talk. let's shift and talk about your newest project, right? Which this will be out in a couple of days, and I think you're just getting ready to announce your new line of wellness products, right? Known as, I think it's, is it known RVD 420?
RVD 420, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you're so ahead of this curve, it's not even funny, right? You have been an advocate for THC and CBD products for decades, way, way before everybody else caught up with you. So you've got this experience, you've got this approach, this knowledge that you have developed. Tell us about bringing all that to this wellness line. Why did you feel this is the right time? And what sets your line apart from the other ones out there?
Okay. So, first off, I'm not just an advocate, but I am also a longtime user, and I live as an example. And I got into advocating because there was like so many inconsistencies that I thought people would care about. You know, I was like, wait a minute, it's a Schedule I controlled substance. That means no medicinal value. I'm talking about THC, marijuana here. The most harmful drug to society and to our health, Schedule I, along with heroin and acid. But at the same time, like, it's no one's ever died from it, and it doesn't even have enough toxic levels to cause death. Like, I think people would care about that if they knew, because I don't think they know or even thought about that. And that's just like one of those facts, you know. Yeah. And then anyway, I started learning why it was outlawed, because it could replace like everything. Yeah. There was a guy named Jack Harer. Jack Harer was a mentor of mine. Now it's a brand, a strain. But he was a real guy. And he was the first guy to tell everybody that, you know, there's over 5,000 products you can make from hemp. And everybody thought he was crazy because he was ahead of his time. And he had this thick book he used to sell or give away down on Venice Beach. And I had the pleasure of knowing him and hanging out with him. And I learned so much. But he once said, and I've seen it confirmed so much, you could, like, 80% of everything. It's not just like the you think of like the wood maybe and the walls. You don't think about the paint, the lacquer. You can wash your hair with it. You can eat it. You can make fuel out of it. You can do almost anything. It's so versatile. And it's a lot safer and easier to grow than actual, say, lumber, where it takes 20-year-old trees as opposed to 90 days full-grown, boom, let's grow the next crop. But anyway, there's a lot of reasons why it's outlawed. The reasons that we were taught are all lies. And so I always just found that really interesting. And people are also taught not to care, though, you know? So it's not something that a lot of people want to hear about. They want to just be like, oh, he's stoned, and not listen, you know? So that's the position that weed has been in. But I have my own brand of cannabis products coming out. I years ago had RVD CBD, and we had some really good products. I had some shady partners. I should probably even stop bringing this up, just because it's, I don't want to put like a negative tone on it, but I had a couple of partners that were paying themselves and putting the money into their own little company they had between the two of them. So I stopped doing that. But since then, for the last 3 or 4 years, I've had so many fans when I'm doing meet and greets that ask me where they can get my product. Is it in their state? Is it available? And unfortunately, until now, I've had to say I really don't have any product. But now with this launch, we're going to go countrywide. So over the summer, state by state, we have some big partners like Mint dispensaries, which are everywhere. And we also have like Bahama Mamas and Planet 13 here in Las Vegas, which is the largest in the world dispensary. And anyway, tons of products. We're going to be doing everything CBD and THC and in places where it's more popular, some of the other Delta cannabinoids. And we're looking to not just get out there in the market, but obviously it's all going to be stuff that I approve, or some of it I'm going to actually like help come up with. Yeah. But on top of that, I love being the guy people can ask questions to, you know, because we learn from experience, and there's firsthand experience, and then there's second or third hand, you know. A lot of stuff we learn just from reading or other people telling us what happened. I know a lot about cannabis from third, second, and first hand. I find first hand experience to be the most credible.
Right. Yeah. And that's right. Misconception is the biggest obstacle in all this, right? Because people hear that people lump things, right? They think marijuana, and they picture the 90s stoner guy in movies, and that's what it all is. And that's not it, right? It's fun though.
It's fun for people to think that. You think, oh, he's smoking. You got the munchies.
Yeah.
I've been smoking like this whole interview, and I don't think that I change at all. Tell me if if that's any different. But
and I've not seen you eat a thing.
Everybody, yeah. But I do that during my podcast, and I ask my hosts all the time, you know, and my guests, I'm like, do you see me change at all? Because, there's responsible smoking. You're not going to see me giggle like a schoolgirl. But if that's something that the neighbor wants to do on weekends because his tolerance isn't that high, then he should have the right to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for me, I've always been on the responsible side when it comes to being able to ask questions. I waited forever until I actually smoked on camera. Sure. It was on Be Real podcast. This what's he call it when he rolls the windows up and you're fish bowling and
yeah. I don't know the name, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, you know what? It's time to go ahead, and people got to deal with the fact and see me smoke. But before that, even though I would advocate, I felt like my position was telling people about facts, about dates, numbers, and then other people, it's their position to smoke and flip off the government, say, fuck you, I'm smoking right here. And you know, for me, I didn't want that used against me to harm my credibility.
Sure.
And also I didn't think it looked, I didn't like looking at myself smoking. I thought it was kind of like an ugly picture, you know, and I got over that and finally said, you know what? It's legal now. It's not like I'm doing anything that's immoral by my values, you know? And I've said for years, I'd rather if a kid, not that kids should be doing anything, but if someone grew up and wanted to take after me and they smoked marijuana instead of smoking cigarettes, then yep. I would look at that as a good thing, you know? And that was, yeah, that's...
It's
cigarettes are one out of two.
These conceptions, right? Because it's like, there's a mentality about cigarettes and tobacco. There's a mentality about alcohol and everything else. And then, but yet somehow they think marijuana is the evilest of it all.
Yeah,
and the facts don't support that.
So I think it's changing, you know.
Because of things like this, because of people like you who are persistent, who are patient, who are educating people.
I knew eventually that common sense would win. You can't call it non-medicinal when at the same time the government had a pill called Marinol that was 100% THC that they were giving to select patients. At one time, they grew joints and pre-rolls in big coffee cans and gave them to a bunch of people for life. They were grandfathered into this study. And at the same time, saying it's non-medicinal and destroying people's lives over. So anyway, yeah, so Trump, President Trump recently rescheduled it. This is really big because it's been a schedule one since 1970 when Richard Nixon put it there. And it was supposed to be temporary when Nixon put it there. There was a report that he was getting in on it, and then he was going to classify it. But when the report came in and it said that marijuana is not that bad, it's not addictive, all this stuff he didn't want to hear, he threw it in the trash, kept it a Schedule One. And since 1970 until just now, it's been wrongly categorized. So it's kind of a big deal. It's going to be Schedule Three now. And that is going to change, I think, the education that is given to adults and to younger people in schools and everywhere in life. I understand more people are smoking cannabis now than drinking alcohol. That's a pretty amazing thing if it's true. And I've always said that it's safer. I'm all for rights. I think you should have a right to do whatever. But when it comes to defending cannabis, I'm glad to have my name on products so people can get it because it's RVDs, and we have a lot of really cool products coming out too. So it's not just the pre-rolls and the flower and the pain creams and stuff. Although that will be among what we have with RVD 420 products. I'm excited though. I want to tour everywhere where the dispensaries are carrying the RVD cannabis. Make sure they're carrying my product. Go see my hometown, Battle Creek, Michigan. Hell yeah.
And again, there's so many positives, so many things that get, and it's not like just a celebrity throwing his name on something, right? This again, this is not a new thing for you. This is a lifelong learning process for you, right? That you have, like you said, the firsthand experience, and you have researched, you have been there, you have talked to people, you've experienced it, you have been out there. So when fans, listeners, people that need these products want something they can trust, right? They can go to RVD because RVD's, you're not going to put your name on something that you personally don't believe in.
And I'll share something with you that I haven't talked about in this interview, but what have I learned, through all my experience about cannabis? As a professional athlete, let's say, a quasi professional athlete, but let's just say from that perspective, what I get out of it, because years ago, like when I first broke into wrestling, first time I ever smoked it was 1991. It was in Jamaica. And at that, I was totally against because I was taught that it's a dangerous hallucinogenic like PCP and heroin, and it'll put you in the ground. But then I was quickly learning that the guys I was looking up to, these wrestlers that were in tremendous physical condition, they liked to smoke weed, So I gave in to peer pressure, and that was way back then. But what I used to hear people that wanted to defend it say was, if they weren't athletes, they would say that it helps with glaucoma, and if they were athletes, they would say it helps with inflammation. It does, but I can't say that I've ever like smoked a doobie and then felt swelling go down in my elbows or something, like that'd be stretching it a little bit. But what I can tell you though is that what I've learned from my process is when I smoke a doobie, it gets me feeling like I'm at my best. So I'm the best version of me, because people bought a ticket to see me. They were watching promos of me. They don't care if I didn't sleep last night or if my stomach's upset, or if I got the flu or if my ankle is hurting, or I'm fucking tired. None of that is going to factor into why they bought a ticket. They want to see the guy that was advertised, and I'm going to be that guy. And a lot of it has to do with stretching and with warming up, a real inner body kind of experience where I get in touch with everything and really get to know and do a complete body check inside and out, get to see how I'm doing with the weed. It increases my spiritual vibration and it picks me up, and so I'm not focusing on my ankle bothering me or God forbid problems going on at home that I can't do anything about right now. You know what I mean? It makes me feel good. And when you got to feel good to actually, to really be, to be doing good, you know, I mean,
yeah, you got to project what's inside. Right?
Can't have one without the other.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously, like we said, the listeners could go to rvd420.com. All the information. Is this when is the official rollout of will we start seeing the product out there?
So the information is on there. It's launching the pre-soft launch or whatever is out, I think, by the time this plays on the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's a soft launch, and I think we're doing a hard launch. I don't know if it's a week later or something, or what more the hard launch involves. It will be available to some degree. It might just be the soft launch might just be available online, and then in the stores on the hard launch. I'm not exactly sure, so I'd hate to steer you in the wrong direction.
No, that's okay. But by the time people are listening to this, you go to rvd420.com. There will be information up there. There will be, at least the soft launch. There will be more than what we've given you. And before we're winding down here. Before we do that, I have to mention the documentary you did, Headstrong. Was that the correct name, right? Headstrong.
Yeah. Yep.
And I know I don't want to sidetrack. I don't want to derail you for too much longer. But I do feel this was an important project for you, an important piece of work for you. And it is available, right? And it does deal a lot with concussions. Correct.
Yep. It sure does.
Which is a very crucial thing in the world right now.
Yeah, I learned a lot more about concussions than I ever wanted to.
Again, firsthand, right? I mean,
yeah, it's on Amazon.
Yeah.
And it's very, raw and open and unfiltered as far as like letting you come in and see what's going on as it's going on. 2016, I showed up to do a stand-up comedy tour, but I had double vision from getting whacked in the head in a match a couple nights before, and it wasn't going away. I never had symptoms stick around like that. Usually it's a couple seconds.
Yeah.
Very rarely, I can count them on one hand, has it ever lasted overnight. But this one, man, it stuck around with me. And so it eventually overtook the whole agenda of what the documentary was going to be and what my next 2 years were going to be about. And it's crazy. My evil ex was saying I was faking it so that I wouldn't have to pay her more money while we were getting divorced. And here I am going to vision therapy. And I felt fine looking out of either eye one at a time, but out of both of them, I saw double and carried on until I guess sometime in probably, I don't know if it's 2017 or 2018, but eventually I did get to where my vision reaction and everything is back to normal. Normal shitty because I've always had a crappy vision.
Yeah.
But yeah, Headstrong, me and Joe Clark made this movie, the two of us. And we also then made the Sabu movie, so
so
check that out, but I'm not really sure to tell you where to see that, but hopefully if you Google it it'll
be up there. But again, everybody should, again, you don't have to be a wrestling fan to watch these and enjoy them and to get the impact of them. And I guess also before we wind down, get congratulations, right? You're fairly a new father, correct?
Yes, very new.
What's that like?
It's pretty awesome. Katie does 99% of the work, so she makes it really easy on me. Otherwise I would have a total different experience, but we got twins.
Oh.
So it's, it's every bit as much having a newborn keeping you up all night, except times two. And a lot of times as soon as one gets put to sleep, the other one will cry and want to be fed. But they're really cool. I never thought that I would be having babies and raising children and having a family like that. I guess you never know. But Katie wanted it so bad that it was so awesome to make her dreams come true. And she's like the best mom ever. Like, she's literally available 24/7 for them,
Yeah.
and around the clock, wake gets
It's
up when they're crying and feeds them or changes their diapers or whatever, and is not sleeping at all. But I'd never been around babies before. Never had a relationship with babies. Everything is really organic, like happening without expectations. And I gotta say, I had no idea that you could interact with babies that are four
yeah.
months old. Yeah.
It's such a beautiful thing, right? A whole new perspective of life,
Yeah.
to see it through them. But yeah, it's I love seeing the pictures when you guys post up, every now and then of the family. It's so cool to see you in that chapter of your life.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, and then of course, as we wrap down, you're still out there doing shots, right? You're still making appearances. So check that
Yeah.
out. Of course, you got to the YouTube channel, right? One of a Kind with RVD. Everybody needs to go and subscribe to that. What do you kind of have a central way that people should follow you?
I have robvandam.com, so that's
Okay.
where I see like where my appearances are and stuff.
Okay. And I'm sure they can get to the YouTube, any social media, everything through that site, right?
Yeah, and the real RVD is everywhere on
Yeah.
social
Social
media.
media. Yeah.
If you
All
don't
right.
follow me already, then what the hell's wrong with you?
I can't imagine too many people listening don't already follow you, but in case you haven't, right? People may not know of the YouTube channel, so they need to go subscribe. But go hit him up everywhere. Again, Rob, it's been an honor to talk to you.
Got a movie coming out too.
Yeah.
Maybe this week or not. No, June. It's I don't know. I'm going to premiere June 9th. Not really sure when it comes out, but it's. I've been hearing a lot that they've been showing the trailer at horror movies, so it's out there, and it's Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, the remake?
Another remake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. You're in that
Yeah.
movie? Yes, I have seen the trailers and
Okay.
oh, that's see that adds a whole nother. I'm a huge horror fan. So that adds
Yeah.
a whole nother level of getting this. I'm already looking forward to that movie, but now that it's the same way with like Jericho pops up in horror movies and some of these other guys, and it's cool to see something I already like, but and see these other guys I know from a different realm of life in them. But
Yeah, right. Yeah.
it's fun. But yeah, man, I'm glad you're still out there doing your thing, being very genuine, right? I mean, it's one
That's
thing
it.
I think we could see through your entire career that RVD's been RVD and you've not catered to anybody. And so everybody should go out, subscribe, follow him, subscribe to the YouTube channel, go check out RVD 420 and those products. Don't believe preconceptions that you may have. Go in with an open mind, do your research, and just don't believe propaganda sometimes. Just go and do it with an open mind. It's all I ask.
It's not for everybody,
No.
that's for sure. And I never force it on anybody. But now,
There's so many benefits.
the CBD can handle just about all
It is.
the medical benefits without getting you high, that THC would do. So,
So versatile.
got a lot of
Yeah.
choices now.
Yeah. And again, it's been an honor to talk to you, Rob. And I
Cool. Thanks,
appreciate your
man.
time. I know you're a busy guy. And hopefully we can connect again maybe in the future and maybe talk again or plug something else because you stay busy.
Absolutely, man.
All
Appreciate it.
right.
Thanks,
All
Van
right.
Dam fam. Be safe.
Absolutely. Yep. All right, Rob. Have a good week, buddy.
You too.
All right. See you, sir.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course, all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, and thank you to RVD for coming on and doing that interview. Hopefully I'll get to chat with him again in the future. Go check out RVD420.com and check out his products. And while you're out there, guys, follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much any platform. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty, and you will find me. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my other various podcasts. Also, go check out all of the other WrestleCopia Network podcasts. You can find the individual shows on your favorite podcast platforms, or you can go to WrestleCopia.com and find them all. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account and then download the app on all of your smart devices. All right, I'm very excited again for my next episode. I have a first-time podcast guest. Not only that, but this man has only done one interview since his wrestling career interview for a magazine, a local magazine in Ohio. So this is his first major interview, his first podcast interview. You all know him. He is a man that's formerly known as Sheikh Ali Hassan, or the Iranian Assassin, or Sheikh Abdullah Ali Hassan. It is former superstar, former WWE referee, former WWE tag champion, Jack Krueger, in his first ever major interview. You don't want to miss that. Make sure you subscribe so you do not miss that show next episode. Guys, this is fun. It's a lot of great stories. It's very exciting. So that's coming up next episode. But until then, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.